Today, we're headed to San Francisco to talk splash hits, garlic fries, and waterfront real estate. Grab your layers because we're going to Oracle Park, home of the Giants, on this week's episode of Ballpark Road Trip. Welcome to Ballpark Road Trip. In this podcast, we will be traveling around to each major league city and talking to locals who know their home ballparks inside and out. I'm your host, Jacob Russell Snyder, and if you're listening to this podcast, you like ballparks, or you're planning on visiting a ballpark sometime in the future. Well, you've come to the right place. Here on Ballpark Road Trip, we will pick a different ballpark every week and cover everything you need to know for your trip, including transportation, tickets, food, places to visit while walking around. We'll talk pre-game traditions, post-game spots, and anything else to help make your visit a success. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Ballpark Road Trip. I'm your host, Jacob Russell Snyder. And today on the show, we are visiting possibly my favorite ballpark in all of Major League Baseball, Oracle Park in San Francisco. Now, admittedly, I might be a bit biased because out of my top four parks, PNC, Wrigley, Camden Yards, and Oracle, this is the park that I've been to the most, being from the Bay Area. Later, we will be getting into all the cool things to do at Oracle with longtime fan Tyler Hall. But before we get going, I want to clear something up. If you've listened to other episodes, you might have heard me talk about my A's fandom, as well as stories following the Giants around to away games. You might ask yourself, wait, are you an A's fan or a Giants fan? Surely you can't be both. Well, as it turns out, you can, and I'll tell you exactly how that happened. I was born in San Francisco, and I lived there until I was 7 when I moved to Oakland. The first Bay Area team to make the postseason in my life were the 1987 San Francisco Giants. In fact, I remember my dad waking me up early before getting ready for school to watch the end of the Giants game from the night before, where they beat the Padres to win the National League West. Will Clark, Jeffrey Leonard, and my favorite starting pitcher, Don Robinson, who it seemed always hit at least 3 to 4 home runs a season. I went to a Giants playoff game versus the Cardinals that year, and at that time, to get playoff tickets, you had to call Ticketmaster over and over since lines were always busy. So my family went down to my dad's office, where they had multiple phone lines, and called until we were able to get a pair of tickets. So I was definitely a Giants fan at that point. Now, at the same time, that same office was owned by my grandfather, and he had season tickets to A's games. And so, when the All-Star game was at the Coliseum in 1987, I was able to go with him to the All-Star workout. And during that 1988 season, when the A's made the World Series, I became a huge A's fan. 1989 was probably the best year of my life. I turned 10, I started playing fantasy baseball, Field of Dreams, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, and Batman all came out in theaters, and the A's and the Giants played each other in the World Series, the Bay Bridge Series. It bums me out that my favorite World Series of all time will forever be overshadowed by the 1989 earthquake, but that's life. So by that time, I followed both the A's and the Giants hardcore. I knew everyone on both teams, and before interleague play, it was kind of okay to have your National League team and your American League team. And it definitely helped choosing games on the road because I could try to see the Giants in National League parks and the A's in American League parks. By the mid-1990s, both the A's and the Giants were in need of new stadiums, and the Giants were the first, and as it turns out, the only team in the Bay Area to get theirs. They did what A's ownership never understood. To build a ballpark in California, it has to be privately financed. California voters don't want to pay for billionaires to have new stadiums. If you sell donuts, we'll buy your donuts, but don't tell us that we have to build your donut shop as well. Dodger Stadium, privately financed. Oracle Park, privately financed. Chase Center, the Warriors' new arena, privately financed. SoFi Stadium, home of the Rams, the new Clippers arena, all privately financed in California. In fact, the Giants finished paying off their ballpark debt in 2020 and are currently developing property across the Cove. So I was excited when it was announced that the Giants were building a new ballpark downtown. I followed the process every step of the way from college down in Southern California. I even had a t-shirt with the renderings on it that said, "Build the ballpark." That reminds me, does anyone want an old Howard Terminal t-shirt? I have zero use for it anymore. Anyway, when I finally saw the ballpark on TV opening day against the Dodgers, it was everything I could hope for. First, just having a brick backstop, I knew on every pitch that I was not in Candlestick anymore, nor was I watching a game in a multi-purpose stadium. This was one of those true retro parks. I loved the outfield wall in right field with its bricks and archways and fans standing outside the ballpark looking in through chain-link fences. I don't actually remember my first game at Pac-Pal Park, as it was called back then. Pac-Bell Park, SBC Park, AT&T Park, Oracle Park. I think I still use all the names except SBC. Just depends what slips out. Anyway, I'm sure my first game was the summer it opened, when I came home from college. But I don't remember the actual game. I've been to many games since then, including playoff games, World Series games, the 2009 All-Star Game, and many games taking groups of foreign students, walking them around the park, and teaching them about baseball. So I can't really describe my first time going. I will tell you about my top three memories from my past 20-something years going to Oracle. But before I do, I want to mention that, of course, my greatest memory was not one game, but it was being able to see Barry Bonds play in person. No matter what you think of him as a person, or the things that he's put into his body, it was an absolute joy to watch Barry Bonds hit home runs out into the Cove. I have never seen any other player get nothing to hit all day, and then take the pitcher's one mistake deep on his only chance in the game. Just incredible. But none of these memories include Barry Bonds, so here they are. Number 3, the 2010 playoffs, Game 1. The Giants haven't been in the postseason in a minute, and the place is electric. Tim Lincecum has 14 strikeouts against the Braves. I was only able to get a standing room ticket, so I was up on a railing right near the Coke bottle and the glove in left center. Not the best place to watch a game, no leaving, but I was happy to be there. I'd still go walk up and check out the view while you're there, though. I also recommend getting a Ghirardelli chocolate sundae. That leads me to my second memory. I served ice cream sundaes and hot chocolate for about 1 hour at the 2012 World Series. I was dating a girl who worked for a nonprofit called Juma. Juma helps kids get into college, but one of their services is getting these teens jobs for their resumes, and those jobs are concession stands at the ballparks, at the Coliseum, and at Oracle Park, serving coffee, hot chocolate, selling corn dogs, and ice cream sundaes. Now, during the World Series, though, those kids would have to be at the ballpark by 1:30 for a 5 o'clock start, and on a Wednesday afternoon, that's right in the middle of school. So I was asked to man one of the ice cream stands until they showed up, and then I could just roam around the ballpark for the rest of the game. Which I did. I used my ballpark worker pass to get into all kinds of areas I wasn't supposed to be in. Club levels, diamond suites. I didn't have any seat, but I could walk around and stand and watch the game. That was a really cool experience. Number 1. This happened in 2020. And you're probably thinking, 2020? There was no baseball in 2020. Well, you're partially right. Back during COVID, once baseball came back without fans, there was no way to go to a game. Unless you went by kayak. My wife had bought me a two-person inflatable kayak the year before, and we took it out into McCovey Cove for an A's Giants game. We listened on the MLB app, watched the replays on the scoreboard, and had a great time. This had been an option for me for 20 years, ever since the ballpark opened, and it took a worldwide pandemic for me to go out and actually do it. But let me tell you, the experience lived up to all the expectation. This was definitely the top day of the COVID pandemic lockdown for me, bar none. I recommend it if you have access to a kayak. If you don't, City Kayak in San Francisco rents McCovey Cove Experience kayaks for $80. And then you have to kind of decide if you would like that or if you want to spend $80 on SeatGeek and get third row behind the visiting dugout. Up to you. But now it's time to talk more with my guest, Tyler, who's going to talk to us all about the ins and outs of Oracle Park.
Oracle Park.
Joining me on the show today is Tyler Hall. Tyler is from Sacramento and has gone to a lot of Giants games over the years. Tyler, thanks for joining us.
Hey, yeah. Thanks for having me, Jacob. Excited to talk Giants and Oracle Park with you.
Tyler, how long have you been going to Oracle Park?
Since it opened. I've been a Giants fan for about 35 years now, so grew up going to Candlestick and been going to Oracle now through all the name changes.
Right, right. So this is, we're on name number 4, I am thinking. But what do you call it? Do you like to call, do you call it Oracle? What do you have you gotten used to that?
Yeah, it took me a while, but I'm on the Oracle train now, so I call it Oracle.
If it wasn't Oracle, what of the three telephone companies would you be calling it?
AT&T, because that's when the glory days, you know, the 3 and 5.
Now, you come in from Sacramento, so how do you get to the ball game? Do you drive yourself?
Yeah, so I'm up back in Sacramento now. I was born and raised up here. I was in the Bay for about 10 years, and now I'm back home. And so, yeah, coming from outside of the city, I would definitely recommend public transit, you know, taking BART. So I usually would park in, like, the East Bay. I know a lot of people fly in, too. There's BART at both Oakland and SFO. So I would just hop on BART. And, you know, save on some parking, get to experience the sights and sounds of BART as well. But, you know, you can usually get off at either anywhere between, Embarcadero and Powell and basically just walk down. If you get off at Embarcadero, you have a nice walk along the water to get to the ballpark. If you get off near Powell, you can basically get over to third pretty quick and have a straight shot down to third and King.
And if you don't like walking, you can always do a, you know, BART to Muni as well. Do you ever get lazy and do the BART to Muni route, or do you walk every time?
No, I usually walk it, but I know Muni is a pretty good option. Last time I did it was probably about a decade ago. I think it was only $1 or $2. So, yeah, if you don't want to get the walk in, you know, hop on Muni for a couple bucks and just get there without the steps.
Now, let me ask you, have you ever taken the ferry to the ball game?
I have not. That's one that I never have done. But it's something I'm interested in. The one thing that I will say is because I usually, if I go to a game, I don't leave early. And the ferries have like a stop time where they'll announce, you know, if the game goes extra innings at night, you have to get out to the ferry by the end of the next inning or we're leaving you behind. But that said, especially for like day games or if you don't mind leaving a ball game early, I've heard the ferry is a phenomenal route.
Are you a season ticket holder, or do you get your tickets game to game?
I usually get them game to game. When I was in the city, they had this thing called a ballpark pass, so I would basically get to choose, you know, say I want to go to the game tonight, and they'd give you a ticket to get in. So it was essentially kind of like season tickets, but now that I'm up in Sacramento, it's more of an event to plan to get down there. So I go game to game now. I usually go to 1 or 2 a month from up here now.
How do you go about getting your tickets?
Usually StubHub. Right now, with the team not being as, you know, such of a hot ticket, I usually compare StubHub with the team itself. Go to, you know, sfgiants.com and look at tickets. Sometimes, you know, one's cheaper than the other, but for the most part, like StubHub, if there's people who are just trying to move tickets last minute, you can hop on there and usually get a pretty good deal.
you know, comparatively, when I try to get tickets to A's games, and StubHub's not a good deal because there's so many open tickets there in the secondary market. But I feel like you're right. There's a lot of season ticket holders and people who have bought tickets in the San Francisco area who are put their tickets right there on StubHub, and it's a great way to go.
Yeah.
Now, where would you suggest people sit when they come to a game at Oracle? And you can preface that by letting us know if there's any place that you like to sit. Do you have a favorite area that you like?
You know, yeah, usually, like, when I was living in the Bay Area, I didn't have a family, so I'd go for, you know, club level or lower bowl somewhere. But especially if you're traveling and kind of on a budget but still like to see, I like to say there's not really a bad seat at Oracle. The only place I would say that might be not quite true is the upper deck left field corner, because you can't quite see the left field corner of the field. But if you're coming from, especially if you're coming from out of town and you're like, I want to see Oracle, I'm going to like a game or two, I would suggest upper deck, either right behind home plate or down the right field line, because then you have the views of the water, the Bay Bridge. And it's just really beautiful up there. Now there's a couple buildings tall enough that even from the right field corner, you can see a little bit of the skyline as well. And then, you know, right behind home plate, I mean, you still get a view of basically all of those same things except for the bridge. See a little bit more of Oakland from right behind home plate. Well, I guess for next year only, if the A's are playing at the same time, you can see the lights on at the Coliseum as well from up there, which is usually pretty cool on a night game.
I was thinking that this might be the only situation right now in the majors where you can see one ballpark from the other. I don't know if there's any others. I know that Yankee Stadium and like the Polo Grounds way back in the days, you could were right across the river, but I don't think there's any others in the majors right now where you can see the lights from one place.
Yeah, I don't think so. City's a little too far away now. Mm-hmm. And you know, obviously at Angel Stadium and Dodger Stadium are too far away from each other to see. So,
right.
It's pretty cool to see, you know, kind of, you obviously don't see the other game, but to see another stadium where a game is going on is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. So you have your ticket, and I agree with you in the upper deck right field. That's one of my favorite places to sit, especially with the views of the water and views of the bridge. Now, for some people, let's say they're coming and they came for the stadium and it's, I don't know, maybe the fourth inning or so, and they're ready to walk around. Do you have any places that they should check out in while they're inside the ballpark?
Yeah, you know, I highly recommend walking around the ballpark, even if you can get there a little early, just because of all the views that you can take in. You know, watching an inning from the arcade is pretty cool. You can see McCovey Cove, you know, maybe if you're lucky, a splash hit will go over your head.
The arcade's a section, right? You're not talking about a video arcade.
Yeah,
you're talking
sorry. About... For those that aren't familiar, very good call. Thanks, Jacob. The arcade, if you've watched a game at Oracle Park, is the right field wall. So that's those five or six sections up above, on top of the right field wall, which is 24 feet tall for Willie Mays. You know, right up there is what the team and the fans call the arcade. So yeah, I would recommend walking along the arcade. There's great food all around the place, and different items are available in different areas. So I'd recommend checking those out. Are we going to get into food a little bit later? Should I drop some favorites?
Yeah, tell me. Go ahead. Tell me what are some of your favorites? Because I know that you can go, if you go behind the scoreboard, there's a nice little area of food there. Is that where you go to get your food? Or what are you? Are you a traditionalist, or do you have special Oracle Park favorites?
Yeah, it depends. So one, I feel like if you're coming in, as long as you can handle some garlic, you got to get some garlic fries. I also, one of my favorite actual like dishes to get is the cha-cha bowl from Orlando's Caribbean Barbecue, which is basically behind the scoreboard, a little bit to the left center field side. In each corner on the lower deck, you got the Ghirardelli stand. So if you're not freezing too much, you can get a Ghirardelli sundae. I know right behind the scoreboard as well, the crab sandwiches are extremely popular. So those are some of the heavy hitters.
I'm highly allergic to crab, but from what I hear from others, I hear the crab sandwich is very nice. So,
yeah. And if you're there early, since we're talking about walking around the ballpark, you'd already be inside the ballpark during the game. Before the game, along King Street, outside of the ballpark, they have the Wall of Fame, where they have a criteria for how to get on the Wall of Fame. It's either, you know, I think if they make one All-Star team with the Giants, or they were on the team for X amount of years, or, you know, they have a few different criteria, but basically you can basically see the Giants Hall of Fame because they typically only retire Hall of Famers. They made a couple exceptions in recent years with Bonds, which is a discussion that we'll leave for another podcast, I'm sure, and Will Clark. But outside, you know, you have, you know, anyone who's basically made any kind of impact on the organization is on the Wall of Fame. That's including clubhouse staff, the broadcasters, but mostly players. And that's really cool to kind of just see the history, because the Giants do have a pretty long history.
And just to be clear, that is outside the ballpark. So that's free. So someone, if they don't have, they're in town when there's not a game, they can still come up and take a look at that, even on non-game days.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's on King Street, which will be the longer side of the stadium. You know, two of the sides are surrounded by water, more or less. So it'll be on the long side of the stadium between the Willie Mays statue and the Orlando Cepeda and Gaylord Perry statues is the wall of fame. And that's the other thing, is all the statues too, because then down the right field corner, closer to the lefty O'Doul Bridge, you have the Juan Marichal statue, which is really cool too.
They'll know that with the high leg kick.
The high leg kick, exactly.
Yeah, they can recognize that way. Have you ever, as we continue around the stadium, because it's hard for me to go to the ballpark without walking around a little outside before I come in. I often end up coming in center field just because I like to walk by the water. But have you ever taken in an inning in the right field free fence area where you can stand outside the ballpark and see into the stadium? I know you say you never leave early. Have you ever had a chance to do that?
I have. There's been a couple times where I've been down there and it's just the opportunity presented itself where I maybe didn't have time to go to the game, but I was like, I'm near the ballpark. I'm just going to pop down and check that out. So yeah, similarly, if you've watched a ball game, you know, on television or whatnot, you've noticed that there's I think they call them port walks, but there's basically holes in the right field fence where you can basically stand. It's right underneath the out-of-town scoreboard, and it's the chain link fence there. And so you can come in. Back when the stadium first opened, that was like a hot ticket because every game was selling out. And so if you were there and you couldn't get a ticket, you could at least go watch. I think at the time they would do two or three innings and then file everyone out and let a whole new group in. When I did it, it was probably about 5 years ago. The game wasn't sold out or anything, and it was me and about three people in there, and I think they probably would have let you stay as long as you wanted. But that's also a really cool. You're basically, depending on where the right fielder is standing, you can be 15 feet, 20 feet behind the right fielder and kind of see how they react off the ball because you're at field level, which is a pretty cool experience.
That's cool. While we're outside, we haven't talked about anything to do in the neighborhood before the game. Are you someone who comes straight to the ballpark, or do you like to hang out in China Basin in that area before going into the park?
Yeah, if you have the time, I definitely recommend it. Obviously, a little cheaper outside of the ballpark, so try to fill up on food and drink out there if you can. You know, one of my favorites, it used to be called the Polo Grounds. Now I think it's called the Stick. It changed ownership. It's right up 3rd Street, right next to Baseballism. So if you're standing at the Willie Mays statue and you look across the street, you'll see Baseballism. If you go down 3rd Street, just one or two businesses past that, you'll see the Stick now. Woodbury's on 3rd, which is really cool. 21st Amendment Brewing is over on 2nd Street. So over, if you go up from the Cepeda and Perry statues, go up 2nd a couple blocks, you can go to 21st Amendment. Along the Embarcadero, there's a couple little restaurants. I think one is called Frank's, which is pretty cool. There's Red's Java House. Momo's is one that a lot of people go to. It's a little too crowded and overpriced for me.
I was going to ask that you haven't mentioned Momo's yet, and
Yeah, it's right across the street on 2nd and King. You know, it's a cool spot. You know, I go in there probably once or twice a year, but typically it's a little more crowded, especially before day games. And then if you want to get some bowling in, Lucky Strike is right across the street as well. And one of my favorites, though, especially if you're going into the ballpark, is the Public House. It's attached to the stadium. So you can get in and you can take what you're consuming in with you. And it's a little bit cheaper in there than inside the stadium. So usually on the way in, if I'm feeling like a beer for first pitch, I'll grab a Pliny and head on in.
So you can start in the restaurant attached to the stadium and then enter from there with all your things that you've been drinking and buying already?
Exactly.
Right. Are you a batting practice or autographs type person, or have you ever been?
Definitely. When I was younger, I would definitely go and try to do autographs. I still love batting practice, especially if I'm traveling around, because I'm a chaser myself, trying to get to all 30. So especially if I'm on the road, I definitely try to get in early. It's also really fun to do at Oracle. I try to do it whenever I can because, you know, you can see splash hits. There's a lot of good player accessibility there if you are an autograph seeker. If guys are kind of going in and out of their bullpens, because now the bullpens aren't on the infield territory anymore. They're behind the fence in center field. So if guys are doing some work there, they might sign or throw something up after they're done getting their bullpen in before the game. If you do have a ticket on the lower bowl from dugout to dugout, like I was just talking about, where you have to have a ticket to get down there, there is a little spot, especially if you're an autograph seeker. You can go down underneath the lower bowl, and you can basically, there's about a 10-foot stretch of hallway where the players have to walk in public view to get from the dugout to their clubhouses on both sides. And so if you do like to get some autographs, you can go up pretty easily and watch BP. And when you see them coming off the field, you get down under there as fast as you can and hope that some players want to sign and say hello.
But you have to have tickets for those sections.
You have to have tickets, yeah. I don't have the map in front of me. I'd estimate it's somewhere from like maybe 107 to 124.
We'll dub those correct things in there. Your voice will just change for a moment. Have you checked out those new bullpens yet? I haven't been to the stadium since they put those new bullpens in.
Yeah, I have. It's still weird for me because I'm just so used to them being in foul territory. So I get why they moved it. It's kind of cool because, you know, the garden, one place we didn't talk about when you're going around the ballpark too, is right behind the center field fence is an area called the garden. They actually do have some stuff growing out there that they use for some drink garnishes and some dishes around the ballpark, which is pretty cool. Now they've made it to where some of that fencing there is like plexiglass. So you can see into the Giants bullpen. And then if you go around, in the right center field bleachers, there's a section right there called the 415, where you can basically stand on this deck that's looking into the visitor's bullpen. Oh, cool. They call it the 415 because that's the area code for San Francisco.
Oh, cool. So it wouldn't be a good travel podcast if we didn't mention any of the things to be aware of. I think I agree with you that upper left field corner might be an okay place to avoid if you can get a ticket somewhere else.
Yeah, definitely.
Anything else that are good for people to know?
I would really say, especially if you're on a budget, don't drive down there because they're doing a lot of construction across McCovey Cove where it used to be a big parking lot. Now the team doesn't really offer a whole lot of parking, so it's all like the auxiliary lots of people outside of the organization running them. And I mean, I've seen parking even for like weeknight games against like the Reds where it's not like a marquee matchup. We're talking $60, $70 for parking in some areas because they know they've got you under a barrel pretty much. So that's another, mm-hmm. you know, another go-to for public transit as well.
You think it's pretty safe on a night game to walk back along the Embarcadero back to your BART station?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially if you're not, you know, there's going to be other people walking as well.
Right.
So you're in a pretty big group for the most part. If you're walking up, if you're not familiar with San Francisco, there's an area of called the Tenderloin that I would definitely suggest you avoid. But that's on the other side of Market Street. Mostly. And so as long as you kind of just go up, you know, second, third or the Embarcadero, get to Market Street and get on your train, you can do that. I used to work in the Union Square area and I'd even walk all the way back to my office up there, oftentimes by myself. And I felt perfectly safe.
I've been recommending people staying in the Fisherman's Wharf area if they're choosing between that and, you know, the Union Square Tenderloin area, just because I haven't seen too much crime and whatnot in the Fisherman's Wharf area. And actually, if you're down in Fisherman's Wharf, you can take the E train just along that old old streetcar. They have two of mm-hmm. them, the streetcar, the F line and the E line. You can just take that E line all the way down to the ballpark. So that's not a bad way to get down either. All right. I have just a couple more questions for you before I let you go. But definitely. But this is kind of a subjective one, but I like asking this to everyone because maybe around the country I get different answers. But if a visitor comes to San Francisco and they have a weekend in San Francisco, maybe they only have one day to go to a game, would you recommend a Friday night game, a Saturday game, or a Sunday afternoon game at Oracle?
Oh, man, that is tough. You know, it does get pretty chilly, but even the day games there are pretty chilly. So, you know, if you can get a Sunday day game, and if you're there just to see the ballpark, I would probably say the day game. You get, you know, that way after the ball game, you can go do some stuff as well. It doesn't take up your whole day. I personally don't mind night games, even in the cold, you know, because it can get pretty chilly. It's really cool as well during the day games, especially if you sit where we had talked about, Jacob, in the upper deck, you know, center behind home plate or right field. When you see the water, you can see all the boats out there a little bit better. Sometimes there's some other activity going out on the water that you can see. So if you're coming into town, for one game and you can choose, I would probably tell, you know, out of towners to try to go for that day game.
Yeah. And, you know, as I'm thinking of it, I probably should mention also, San Francisco, Bay Area, our best weather is September, October. So, you know, that August, September time, I think, is the best time of year to make sure you get some good temperatures, either in the daytime or nighttime. So,
yeah, very good call there. I would see people when I lived there in the summer, and you could see that they'd all be wearing like either the Alcatraz hoodie or just like the City of San Francisco hoodies because they were thinking, oh, it's June in California, it'll be warm. And then they get there and it's way colder than they expected. So they just have to buy a hoodie from the shop. Great call on that recommendation as well. If you can make it in like a late August or September, that's definitely when you'd have the best weather.
My final question for you is, thinking of the building, what is your favorite thing about Oracle Park?
I mean, obviously it's kind of weird being there. I've probably been there between 200 and 300 times, so there's lots of different memories and whatnot. But I think it's, I kind of mentioned it earlier, they take really great care of the ballpark. It still does feel like it's pretty brand new. One thing that I really have always enjoyed about it is it's definitely modern. You know, it has a huge scoreboard now. They're actually updating all the speaker system and everything in the ballpark this offseason. But, you know, just the way that the game looks from your seat with like the brick, you know, the brick facade outside, the brick wall in right field, you still get a little bit of that feel like it's, you know, the good old game of baseball that you're watching. And it's not just a modern corporate money grab, which it still kind of is everywhere. But at least in your mind, you can feel like you're enjoying like a good old baseball game again.
Absolutely. Tyler, thank you so much for joining us. It was great talking to you. Thanks a lot for all your insights and your information.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Before we go today, let's talk a little about what to do in San Francisco. There's a lot of chatter out there about how dangerous and dirty San Francisco is these days, mostly by a certain cable station that doesn't want to like anything about San Francisco. But really, it's a little overblown. Most visitors will agree. There are certain parts of town, like the Tenderloin, where things will be a little sketchy, but San Franciscans don't hang out in the Tenderloin, so neither should you. I recommend getting a hotel by Fisherman's Wharf rather than Union Square. I think out of those two tourist areas, Fisherman's Wharf is more scenic. I recommend an Alcatraz tour, plan way ahead and reserve a night tour, lunch in North Beach, and a Chinatown food tour. Stretchy pants food tours give great walking tours of multiple neighborhoods, if I do say so myself. Mention my name or the Ballpark Road Trip podcast to get a discount. I also recommend Stagecoach Greens. It's a really cool outdoor mini golf course that is all San Francisco themed. You can get a beer or a cocktail and hit balls into Victorian houses, Chinatown, and even Oracle Park. There are also a ton of food trucks across the street at Spark Social SF. This is right down the street from the ballpark and from Chase Center, so check them out before a night game. All right, that's our show. I want to thank our guest, Tyler Hall. Next week, we are leaving California and heading out on the road for the first stop on a cross-country ballpark road trip. Until then, this is Jacob Russell Snyder saying, next week, we are leaving California and heading out on the road for the first stop on a cross-country ballpark road trip. Talk to you then.
Thank you for listening to Ballpark Road Trip. If you like what you hear, feel free to follow the show on Instagram at Tours with Jacob. If you would like to get in touch with the show, you can send us a message on Instagram or feel free to email us at tourswithjacob@gmail.com. We'd love to hear any recommendations you have for your home ballpark. You can send us an audio recording by using your voice memo app on your smartphone and emailing it to tourswithjacob@gmail.com. Please keep your suggestions and recommendations to a minute or less, but feel free to send as many as you'd like. We'll make sure to get them on the show at some point. Thanks for listening. See you next time.